Hey, Mike, would you mind coming to my office real quick? I need your help with something.
Sure, boss. I'll be right there. Freaking big brother boss, man. One of these days I'll own this store. And then it'll be Dave scanning the movies. Dave cleaning the septic tank. Dave! Hi, boss. What can I do for you?
Oh, hey, Mike. Good. Sit down over here, would ya? I just got this new Identigraph thing shipped over from the UK off of eBay. It's going to help us find movies customers are looking for, even if they only sort of remember the details, you know?
Ah, okay. That sounds cool. Lord knows I've had too many people ask me what movie that guy was in with that chick from that one show.
I know, right? This thing is going to make our lives a lot easier. I just got to calibrate it before I put it out on the floor. Now, okay, let's test it out on the next Bond movie we're going to watch for the Bondcast, for your eyes only. Right, now, describe the movie you wish to identify, and I'll program the information. Start with the lead actor and go from there.
All right. Male. Caucasian. Old. Englishman. Hair. Fine. Light brown. Prone to smirky eyebrow tilts. Villain. Also kind of old. Guy what was in Game of Thrones.
Wait a minute. Okay. I reckon we're almost there, Mike. Aside from the plot.
Plot. A thing goes missing that controls nukes or something. And then there's a smuggler played by the, Fiddler on the Roof guy. And he eats pistachios all the time.
Right. Okay, let's see if this baby works. The movie you're looking for, Mike, is Mr. Magoo and the Search for the Bomb Pager.
Huh.
How much did you pay for this, Dave?
About a third of your salary, I think.
That's so you, Dave. Patience, Michael. One day, he will be destroyed.
What was that, Mike?
Nothing, boss. Let's just watch Mr. Magoo and the What's It. What do you say?
For your eyes only. It's Roger Moore as Ian Fleming's James Bond 007.
Spy ship sunk in the Ionian Sea. She was equipped with ATAC.
Have we begun a salvage operation?
We asked Sir Timothy Havelock to secretly locate the wreck. He and his wife were killed by Hector Gonzalez. Police were able to identify Gonzalez by Melina, Sir Havelock's daughter.
Good afternoon, Mr. Bond. You are now flying under remote control. Goodbye, Mr. Bond.
Exotic ports, thrilling adventure. This Bond is for your eyes only. No one comes close to 007. When 007 comes close to you.
That's putting it mildly, 007.
Okay, Mike and Jackie, I trust everything's well, no ill effects?
Yep.
All good.
You did grab that ATAC I asked you to grab on your way back, didn't you?
The
A what now?
A what?
The ATAC, Automatic Targeting Attack Computer.
I think it's pronounced attack, Dave. Jeez.
I'm your host, Dave, and welcome back to the Bondcast. It's been a long time, guys. The last time we saw you, we were in space. But we're back down on the ground now for a more gritty, edgy Bond thriller, and for your eyes only, I'm joined by fellow 00 agents, Michael.
Don't concern yourself with the podcaster, one of my less useful people.
And finally, Agent Jackie.
For British eyes only.
If you guys do really well on the podcast today, I'll buy you an ice cream. For your eyes only. So I take it this is the first time for you guys?
Yes. To the point where I really could not stop thinking about the Arrested Development for British Eyes Only joke every time I was trying to remember the name of this film.
So, okay, we should get a pulse right up top. So, Jackie, you said in the last movie, and Mike, I think you kind of tagged up on this, although you didn't go quite as ham as Jackie did. Moore's age in the last film, Moonraker, it was starting to show. He was starting to be leathery. How's he faring in this entry?
Even more leathery.
Oh, really? Okay.
It's kind of insane that, like, there's so many more movies after this still. I think that's what's really getting me. If like this was the last hurrah, I don't think I think it'd be all right. But
and look, I know that I've been harsh, and I don't mean this in an ageist way, because he is a good looking man, and I thought that a couple times while watching this of like, yeah, he looks good. But then it would be again like a Bond girl 20 to 30 years his junior, and I'm just like, ugh.
Yeah, there's some parts where it works and there's some parts where it doesn't, which maybe we'll get into, but like the one girl who's like literally just like throwing herself at James Bond, and like the idea is like
bouncy little American blonde
who... Yeah, she just like sees Bond and is like, I need
obviously
to have
I
him.
Need him, and then later in the movie says to spoiler, you know, what's his face of like, I know what you want, but you're too old for me, and it's like he's the same age as Bond.
And then you have like the you know the scenes where he's doing like feats of acrobatics or whatever, like you know like the skiing scene and stuff, where it's like, no, I don't buy it. I don't buy it.
Well, I said earlier in the podcast, like the series, that there was a couple scenes in this movie where I thought Bond took on sort of a most interesting man in the universe vibe or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think it's when they're on the boat and they're tied up and they're about to be like, you know, pulled off and dragged behind the big boat in the water, you know, as they're bleeding and drawing sharks near. In that scene, and it's just Roger Moore wearing like a blue T-shirt, I think he looks good. I think the problem is they dress him terribly in these movies. They age him up. Like, if you just dress him...
I mean, it's the late 70s to early 80s, and that kind of was the look for all people of, like, what if you were middle-aged?
It's such a... it's so annoying, because, like, there are moments where it's, like, when he's dressed in fine, like, okay clothes, where he doesn't look as old. And this scene in particular, where he's just wearing a freaking T-shirt and, like, slacks, he looks fine. But it's when they have him in these giant puffy blue jackets with like the beanie and the scarf and just like, what are you doing?
And I'll say, I mean, ski suits, ski wear are hard. It's hard to look sexy in that unless you're, again, like this 18-year-old American blonde, like, and even she looks a little goofy in it, well, even though she's obviously attractive.
So it's bad clothes, and it's putting him next to, in this case, women who are far younger than he is, and to the point where the movie itself and the character himself is like, hey, this is weird.
Yeah, I shouldn't be doing this. You're young enough to be my granddaughter. Like,
yes, it's like, why put this in the movie when all it does is make Moore seem 80 years old?
Don't they have showers at the ice rink? How did you get in here?
One of the porters is a fan. He'll do anything for me, and I'll do anything for you.
exceedingly flattered, BB. But you're in training.
That's a laugh. Everybody knows it builds up muscle tone.
Well, not building up a little more muscle tone by putting on your clothes.
Don't you like me?
Why, I think you're wonderful, BB, but I don't think your Uncle Harry would approve.
Him? He thinks I'm still a virgin.
Yes, well, you get your clothes on. I'll buy you an ice cream.
Yeah, I'll buy you an ice cream.
Yeah, it does feel like they're aging him up. Like, he's 54 going on 60, for sure.
Well, it's like, it wouldn't be quite, like, the movie seems to comment on it in two ways, in that it's creepy for Bond, and that it's creepy for the bad guy, too. As you said, she says, like, I know what you want, but you're too old for me. Mm-hmm. So it's like, and as you said, Bond and this guy are basically the same age. If anything, the bad guy's a bit younger, I think.
Well, and the bad guy is, you know, got gray haired and everything, but in that, you know, like, suave European kind of vein where you're like, I mean, he looks good too. Like, but also I understand why the young figure skater is like, you're old.
It's such an odd thing to put into the movie. Like, I could maybe get it if it was like, if it was something they were doing with the bad guy, because bad guys got to be creepy. I get that. But when your Bond is older than the bad guy, it's or the same age, it's just like, why put this in the movie at all? It just shines a light on Moore's age.
Yeah.
And they were already commenting on it at this time. They're like, Moore was just like, I'm kind of old for these movies, so guys.
And again, it's just absurd that, like, I think the thing is not that he's so old in this, but, like, there are so many more to, no pun intended, there's so many more to go.
More.
Roger Moore. So aside from his obvious age, like, how do you think Moore's faring in this one? Do you like him? Like, how's his performance?
I liked him. I love me some Moonraker because it's so fucking stupid. but I think he benefited from this movie being a little more, no pun intended, down to earth. You know, it's a little more serious, a little more...
A little more. I certainly would not call this movie serious or down to earth.
No,
like,
but
this
compared
movie is
to
still,
Moonraker.
Yeah, like, compared to Moonraker, most
it is literally
anything
on the earth.
We're in Greece. We're underwater. Cool. Yeah, like, none of it's like, and then our good friend Jaws meets a dorky girl for to.
But yeah, I kind of like Moore in this, to be honest. Age aside, I think he's like. I think he's playing it well. Like, yeah. The quippiness is working for me. Like, sometimes it's, you know, there's no Pepper in this one. Was Pepper, Sheriff Pepper in the Moore ones, Dave, or was he in the Connery era?
He was strictly the first two Moores.
Okay, yeah. So
we're
like
done with Pepper.
I feel like they have adjusted the tone to, like, have some humor, but it's not, you know, going full Pepper into
that
it.
That said, the opening with
Blofeld.
With Blofeld is
what
so
the heck was
fucking
that?
Silly.
That was like a Looney Tunes bit.
Of dropping him down like a chimney.
Mr. Bond!
I had nothing to do with the rest of the movie, right?
And they didn't show his face. It was all, like, sneaky like that. Yeah, what was the point there? Was there some
behind
the scenes?
So, it was a couple things. So, to talk about the Blofeld of it all. So, we mentioned before in the Thunderball episode that the writer of Thunderball, one of the co-writers, Kevin McClory, sued the production and Ian Fleming because Thunderball initially was written as a movie script. It was Ian Fleming, Kevin McClory, and another guy. I think Jack Winningham was his name. Anyway, they wrote a script for a movie that would have been the first Bond movie. It didn't get made. And then years later, Ian Fleming ends up just like, I'm just going to make a Thunderball story and put my name on it only and not credit any of those other guys, which led to
this'll
a decades-long lawsuit. And as a result of that lawsuit, the production couldn't they couldn't use elements from the old movies like Blofeld or Spectre.
Interesting.
So as a result, but they could use the visage of Blofeld as shown in the previous movies. They just couldn't call him by name. So it was kind of a fuck you to Kevin McClory. They're like, we're just going to kill this character off in a ludicrous way. We don't need you. And also, the whole idea of, as you said, this has nothing to do with the rest of the movie. Supposedly, if you look in the Wikipedia, I don't know how much truth there is to this, but supposedly this scene was sort of meant to be kind of like a bridge to bring on a new Bond actor. We would reference past events, like if you notice in the beginning, he's at a cemetery and he's putting flowers on his wife's grave. So that's kind of
in the world.
Yeah, you have
kind of fucked up there. That he put that on the gravestone.
You have Blofeld there. It was kind of intended to be like a bridge for a new actor to come in. And they did screen test new actors. But there was a bunch of, like, since Moonraker, so Moore was only contracted for 3 movies, and every movie after that was, you know, case by case. So, and as he said, in Moonraker, he was already looking old. So when this one came around, they were screen testing other actors, but they managed to bring Moore back. I think it was kind of a thing. It's like, yeah, he's established. Let's just bring him back. Also, it's the early 80s and there's a recession and we need a guaranteed hit. The studio is under bankruptcy because of fucking Heaven's Gate. We need a hit. And it should be said, this movie lifted MGM out of bankruptcy. It was such a big hit, it brought them out of bankruptcy.
If there's one thing James Bond can do, it's bring in some dollars.
So that was, that's kind of what this opening is. And the Looney Tunes aspect of it aside, this scene, and I think a lot of the action scenes in the movie, for my money, this is like some of the best stunt work in the entire series. As crazy as it is, you have a guy hanging off a helicopter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and they're flying that helicopter like every which way. You know, it's aerial stunts.
It looks as if it is being piloted by remote by a guy. Like, like the way it's moving around, like there were some shots where I'm just like, aren't those blades going to like chip the building or something?
Yeah, I was like, they are getting real close. And
to film it, there must have been like another helicopter.
I mean, it is crazy. Impressive.
There was some of these shots. I mean, obviously, whenever it's more on screen, it's clearly like a rear projection behind him. Yeah. That's fine. But there are some shots that reminded me of like modern day Mission Impossible. Like, sure. It's just literally like that. You could tell
there's a guy on a helicopter.
It's just a guy in a helicopter and he's holding on by a seatbelt. Like, that's some cool shit. And like, there's some shots that he's like literally just on the rail of the helicopter, like with his feet dangling. He can dangle his feet.
It is like, though, like it is beginning what I guess it's a Bond trope, but like this movie, I feel like does more than others, which is like they just won't kill Bond, will they? Like the villains, like.
Why would I shoot him with a gun when, like, I can dangle him from a helicopter?
He was looking forward to this moment. He's going to enjoy it.
Well, no, it's not even that. I'm not even saying shoot him with a gun. Like, he's got the remote control he can remote control pilot the helicopter. Just crash it. Just immediately crash it into the water.
No,
like,
that
kill
won't
him.
No.
But no, he can't. He has to fly him around to like, getting dizzy, aren't you?
He wants to play with his food.
I've looked forward to this moment, Mr. Bond. I intend to enjoy it to the full.
And that there's parts too where the helicopter's like flying over the roof that the Not Blofeld's on, and he's like so close to it, but like, and Bond like, just hop off, Bond. Like you're like a
that
foot
would, that
off
would
the
be
ground.
Like, a 3-foot drop. Now that would be okay, and then you can just punch Blofeld in
the
face.
He's flying by at like 70 miles an hour. He would be like beat up and bruised and killed.
They weren't going that fast.
He'd break
I think
both
that it's,
hips.
It's like they're both having fun.
Yeah, it's like
they're both enjoying this.
It's like dogs play fighting, but they're like sneezing to let each other know like it's just play.
We should point out, I do enjoy, like, there's a couple funny bits in this intro. So Bond lays the flowers down on Tracy's grave, which is, like, the first time she's been mentioned in a few movies. Mm-hmm. He gets into the chopper, but as he's buckling up, he looks outside, and the priest creepily does, like, the sign of the cross over him. And Roger Moore gives him this look like, the fuck?
What?
What are you doing?
Oh, fuck.
You're creeping me out.
That's not good.
It's almost, I've been, you know, watching this so many times, it almost makes me wonder, like, is that a thing? Is the priest in on it? He's like,
he's an agent of Blofeld.
Yeah, like, I'm giving you the cross, you're about to get killed.
sorry about what's going to happen to you.
You said you've watched this so many times, Dave. Is this one of your... Is that just because you've watched all the Bond movies a lot, or is this one of your, like, heavier in rotation ones?
This is one of my favorites, and I think it has to do... it's not necessarily the plot. I think it has to do with the stunt work. Again, this opening scene is great, and I love ski-based Bond movies. And we get, as ridiculous as it can get at times...
We get the whole Winter Games.
Yeah, we get the entire Winter... Was this, like, sponsored by the Winter Olympics or something?
I think it must have just been shot at the time the Olympics were going on.
Yeah,
because we get like multiple sports.
Oh yeah, we get them all.
Get some amazing, like, to speak more about the stunt work, like the ski chases in this movie are so well done.
When they're when they're in the luge, and there's like the luge, the ski, and then the guy on the motorcycle going down the luge like ramp or whatever, that was pretty
thrilling.
Gnarly.
Yeah,
pretty gnarly.
Supposedly, because you may be wondering, like, how is he skiing so fast down that thing? Like, he's going as fast as that bobsled. Evidently, they basically
You're right.
It was basically like a rope or something that was tied to the back of the bobsled, and the other part was tied to him, and they were basically pulling him.
Interesting.
That sounds scary.
Yeah,
that sounds scary as hell.
I love that scene too, because I'm just imagining the bobsled guys being like, "What the fuck? You can't drive a motorcycle on this. You're fucking up the track. What are you doing?"
I mean, however they did it, that is crazy shit, because it's ice.
Yeah.
So this guy's just, and he's like sliding around. Like, it's amazing they didn't slide off. Like,
it is all very high energy and thrilling and, I also really liked, we've had a couple Bonds do underwater stuff, but the when they're like in the sunken ship, like, that was some really cool stuff too, of just like, it looked spooky and like and cool and that, yeah, this movie's got some cool shit in it.
I feel like this feels to me like Moore's Goldfinger, kind of that's kind of where I'm putting this. Like, it does feel like everything is kind of clicking in a way with like the vibe and the way that Goldfinger kind of did for Connery. Like it feels, it's weird to say because he's done a few of these now, but I do feel like this is the first one where the more him as Bond and just kind of the tone of the movies, like, feels like it's finding its groove, like, for the first time, I think.
You know, I, as much as I enjoy the next two movies, this probably should have been more swan song.
It would have been it would be a great one. Like, yeah. Again, I just keep coming back to, like, the thing is that there's just more after this is what's, like, throwing off.
He's already in his mid-50s.
I'm just, like, afraid. I'm afraid for what is to come.
And it's again, like, maybe this wouldn't be quite so noticeable if you'd stop putting 19-year-old girls next to him, but we can't not have a horny young woman.
Well, speaking of young women, let's talk about, so we talked about the intro, let's talk about the main title song, Free Eyes Only, sung by Sheena Easton, the first time we get the singer of the song literally in the credits.
Yeah,
that was wild. I was surprised at that. She's like staring into camera singing it.
Are you guys, have you guys heard much of her music?
I don't believe I have.
Neither have I, but it's good.
It was a fun song.
It's good.
It's
I think
fine.
It fits the tone of the movie, but this is one of those cases where the alternate song performed by Blondie, I think, is much better.
There's a Blondie song?
Well, we're gonna
and they
have
didn't
to,
use it?
We're going to have to listen to that after.
Blondie did, they approached Blondie, she provided it, they decided to go with Sheena Easton instead. And like I said, like, I think Easton's tone fits the movie better, the tone of the song fits this movie better. The Blondie song, even though I think it's a better song overall, it kind of has more of like a surfy kind of vibe to it, like, bow, bow. We'll play it here, but like, it's, I love that song. I think it's great. It just doesn't quite fit the tone of this movie.
Is it also called For Your Eyes Only?
Yeah, it's on their Hunter album, if I'm not mistaken. But it's pretty good. Definitely check it out. It's got that Bond theme. There.
Nice.
You know, it's good.
We had some funky versions of the Bond theme.
Oh yeah, there is some synthy versions.
Talking about
the
music,
theme.
Let's talk about Bill Conti, a guy who's famous for Rocky and the Karate Kid. He made the Rocky theme. Like he does the music here, and this is probably one of the biggest sources of contention for this movie is the music. What were your thoughts?
Really? I thought it was fun. I liked it.
I liked
it. It was fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Does this have a negative reputation?
I thought for sure as we were watching this, I'm like, I know Michael Jackson would be like, God, music sucked. I thought for sure you guys would hate it. This is a surprise.
I wasn't mad at it. I was, it was towards the point of the movie where I'm like, all right, let's wrap things up. So I was kind of just like, like, okay, yeah, let's get a little.
I mean, if I'm just thinking about it, like, okay, first off, the music didn't really stand out to me one way or the other too much.
Oh, wow.
But when it did, it was like, I just noticed they were doing like the Bond theme, like arranged differently and with a lot more synthesizers, which I thought was fun. Like, that's basically the vibe, right? It's just a little more synthy.
I think a lot of people criticize this for being a little too disco-y at times.
I mean, people are too hard on disco. I'm not mad with a little disco.
I didn't really get disco. I got more like I don't know, maybe like Italia disco or something. But
yeah,
it was more like electronic-y is the vibe I got.
Yeah, you know, I was, and the whole thing, the movie's mainly in Greece and a couple other places, but it kind of fits
fits like this is what 1981 Europe sounded like.
Yeah, yeah, it's a little tacky. What of it?
Yeah, I would say like the music to me sounded pretty much like the musics for the other Bond movies, but a little synthier, and I enjoyed it. Where do you stand on it, Dave? Or is this like, because I know you have a lot of the Bond like on vinyl and stuff and like to listen to them. Is this like, do you dig that or do you think this is an abomination?
I mean, it has its own, it's definitely quirky, I would say. And definitely different than previous. I mean, I would say that Spy Who Loved Me is far more disco sounding than.
Yeah, yeah. This you're right. I feel like we did have the disco soundtrack one and this.
Yeah,
didn't feel as disco-y as that.
I think you're right. This is like Italian disco 80s, like early 80s music or something. Like I've grown to like it more over time. It's not my favorite score, but I've grown to appreciate it more over time. It's different.
Yeah, I'm seeing in the Chattopedia, it does seem like it's divided. Like one review says it's a constant source of annoyance. But then there's another quote that said it was one of the best scores of the James Bond movies.
Like, I really like the rendition of the Bond theme when they're in that submarine. And
yes.
It's kind of got that drum
beat. Like. Yes, and it's like, it's doing, this is the one in particular that I was thinking of, where it's like doing the main lead, it's got the synth with like that stank on it, you know?
Yeah. I like the renditions of the Bond theme in the score. Like it works. I like it. I don't mind it.
Yeah. So the after like they do the cold open where they like throw not Blofeld down the tube.
And the music goes bam, but
which okay, I guess I just wanna before we move on, like I wanna wrap up that I'm right, that has nothing to do with the plot. Right,
absolutely nothing. Yeah.
Oh my god, that's funny. In the Chattopedia, it's that cold open's not even like mentioned in the plot synopsis. They just like, yeah. Shame.
Well, we get kind of a cool opening here to the start of the story. Like, it's just this fishing boat, and you see, like, this guy in this black outfit. He throws a cigarette in the, you know, they're bringing the nets in, their fishing boat. He goes in, you know, down below, and you get like, kind of this cool, like, hidden thing where, like, he walks into the meat freezer. He goes in through a door, and then it's like that. And suddenly he's in, like, this command center of this spy boat. It's kind
this
of cool.
reminded me of, God, I don't remember which one it was. Maybe A Spy Who Loved Me, but where they have the British people have the secret base in the like sunken wreck of a boat and everything's like
Man with the Golden Gun.
Yeah, Man with the Golden Gun. This was reminding me of that.
But this is kind of a cool thing. I like that. And they're, you know, they do the thing where it's like, all right, put the handcuffs on. You're attached to the thing. It's your duty. And they end up inadvertently pulling in a sea mine, whatever. Blows the shit out of this boat, sinks it. It's kind of cool. It's like, wow, this is harrowing. Cut back to, it's like, all right, Mr. Minister, we lost one of our boats again. Like, ah, shit, we got another Bond movie starting, don't we?
Yeah.
God damn it.
We lost the attack. And, okay.
The ATAC.
ATAC.
This is where we get into the plot. And
how convoluted, on your convoluted meter, how far is it, Mike?
It's pretty fucking convoluted.
So here's the thing. Like, the main plot is not that convoluted on the convoluted meter, but I do think it's the most, like, dubious plot. Okay, because, like, the idea is they lose the ATAC, which is the communicator to the ICBM, the fleet of nuclear vessels, to, like, that. So the ATAC tells the nuclear submarines to attack. It's like they give the launch codes, right? That's the idea.
It's like it orders the ships to fire missiles.
So this is where it loses me, because, like, okay, so let's assume this falls into, they're like, oh, it could fall into wrong hands, and then they're
Russian hands,
and then they send orders to, like, bomb London, right?
Like, they say that in the movie, like, oh, or worse, like, our own ships could be ordered to attack our own cities,
right? Like, but it's not a remote control for the subs. Like, it's just, like, giving the orders to
so it's just, like, give them a call. It's like, yeah, don't do that order.
Surely they would simply not, like, Roger, we just got orders to bomb London.
Listen, guys, a bulletin, because they don't immediately steal it. The boat is sunk, and then it kind of becomes, like, a hunt to get it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, they could also send out a bulletin like, hey, guys, just FYI, you might get some crazy orders. Ignore them. And then, like, even at the end of the day, if they get the orders to, like, we have to send nukes to London and Paris, belay that order. Let's maybe double check that.
We're changing the password this week, guys.
Surely they would simply not do that.
Yep. And then it turns into, like, the story of revenge for Melina because her dad was helping find the wreckage, and then
it does start to unravel. Like, it does start to get more convoluted.
We need to get the beautiful woman with a crossbow in the mix, and then there's, you know, connections who double cross, who blah blah blah, who send you to their other guy.
Yeah, the weeds of this movie, I think, like, the moment to moment, It is, I think, one of the most confusing ones. Like, it was up there for me with From Russia with Love, where,
well,
like,
it kind of becomes a thing where it's like, okay, so the Havelocks, this guy, he's on this boat and he's like an archaeologist or something, and he's helping the British try to find the sunken ship. He gets killed by this hitman, Hector Gonzalez, but the daughter survives and she vows revenge. And the movie kind of becomes a thing where it's like, all right, and then Bond go, and this is another fun sequence. We get a new car.
Yeah.
We don't see it very long, though. Bond gets a new car, new Lotus. He goes to find the hitman who killed the Havelocks, and he ends up getting an arrow in his back, and then they have to drive. They have this really fun sequence where Bond's car ends up exploding.
I love when the hitman gets the arrow. Like, how he's like,
he belly flops.
Yeah, he's in the middle of, like, well, it's so cool because, like, they're at a big party, and he's like going to dive in, and you just see him belly flop, and you're first just like, what the heck, did he just, like, belly flop? But then you're like, oh, there's an arrow in him.
But I like it, that moment is really good, because all the, like, guests at the pool party, like, their reaction is like, oh, like, you belly flopped, and then we, like, cut back to him, we can see the arrow, we can see, like, the blood in the water, and it takes a second before they realize. So it is this kind of funny moment of just, like, Party foul, Hector.
And if I remember right,
this is kind of an interesting, like, it got me thinking, because, like, if you look at the back, obviously there's, like, armed guards around this complex, whatever, yeah, this pool party. And then some of the guys, like, in at the pool next to these ladies have, like, guns and holsters, like, around, like, the chair. So I'm like, is this, like, a hitman's pool party?
Yeah, we're hanging out with hotties. We're probably doing drugs and whatever.
This is pretty similar to the For Your Eyes Only short story.
Oh, really? It's based on Risky, though, I think.
It's like both. Both. Okay. But this one in particular is for your eyes only. I think the idea in the book is she's using, like, the bow and arrow because it's stealthier. Like, she can, and which happens, like, she commits a flawless assassin and would have gotten away with it, like, scot-free, I think, if James Bond hadn't ended up, like, leading everybody to her.
Yeah,
it is. We should say Bond's reconnoitering in this film, not the best. He walks in, he parks, like, on the other side of the road or whatever. Like, he has, like, this tan jacket, this bright tan jacket. He just, and slacks. He just sort of walks in with binoculars. He doesn't really make a huge effort to conceal himself.
No. No, and he's found, like, pretty quickly.
Yeah, obviously. They're like, hey, who's that middle-aged man in business casual? Like,
he may as well have just walked right up to the front door and be like, hey, can I join your pool party?
I'm here for the early bird special.
But yeah, we get, like, a kind of a cool scene. Like, the guy pays, like, the lock guy who becomes kind of one of the second act villain of the movie. Mm-hmm. With the octagonal glasses.
The octagonal glasses. We're using this high-tech facial recognition.
Yes, let's get to that next. So Bond notices that someone pays off Gonzalez, and when Gonzalez gets killed, he's like, all right, well, that's the guy I got to find next, whoever paid him. That'll lead me, you know, down the trail or whatever. But in order to do that, I got to go back home, use the identigraph,
which might be
one of the dumbest things in a Bond movie. They walk into this room in Q Branch. The lights all turn red for some reason.
That's part of the technology.
This is so dumb.
Right. Now describe the person you wish to identify, and I'll program the information.
Male Caucasian, late 30s. Hair, fine, light brown. That's it. Parted in the middle.
Yeah, wait a minute. Right.
Eyes. A little smaller.
Uh-huh.
Blue.
Right.
A little grayer. Yeah. That's it. You have it. Now, nose. A nose, not a banana, Q.
I'm sorry.
And he basically looks at this computer readout and he's just giving the details to Q as he types it in and makes several mistakes. He gives him a banana nose. He gives him the kissy lips.
Yeah, what are we doing?
As he's giving him the description, the laser, like, or the computer readout already basically looks like the guy already.
I know, well, because it's like a character creation model in a video game where, like, try the other eye shape. No, the next one. Okay, that one. Yeah. Uh-huh. and the hair is parted in the middle. Okay, great. Yeah. That's not something anyone can change ever.
But it's
so
goofy because ultimately it's like they could have just, like, talking to any police sketch artist and it would have given them the same result.
No, we need the stupid red room tech. Yeah.
This is like when the company's, like, forcing to use you to use AI. Like, we need to figure out how you're incorporating AI into your work.
Paid,
like,
a lot of money.
It'd be
for
way
this.
Easier if we just had the character sketch artist do this. Like, no, Bond, we invested so much money in this tech. Well, we have to use it.
When the scene begins, like, he's putting in, like, what looks like giant, like, discs, like, you know, like, old-school hard drives that are, like, these giant discs, puts them in there, loads them up, like, he's loading up a washing machine.
We need the amount of entire room for this.
Yeah, the amount of, like, emissions that this is generating, is, you know, the water it's sucking up.
The water usage is crazy.
Every time they use the identigraph, like, 2 square miles of rainforest are destroyed.
Yeah. But it's worth it because they find him, yeah.
They find him. And it's like, all right, next stop is Cortina. We're going to we're having another ski movie, and it's been too long since we've had a ski movie.
We gotta get some winter games.
But it was just the beginning of the movie, Mike, and the pre-credit sequence. We need an elongated sequence here.
Yeah,
we need more.
We
skiing.
Need the whole winter games.
Damn it!
And this is the introduction of
BB.
BB, yeah, I forget the ice skater. The skater, an element that does not need to be in the movie at all.
No.
She is like, she's like freshly 18, and like she's the one who like. This is the most like incredulous because there's literally a scene where she just sees Bond. Like there's no like he's not doing anything. He's not doing cool Bond stuff.
He's just an old man. He's just a guy standing there. Her old man sponsor.
Yeah. And she like leans over to like her like you know, uncle or whatever and is like, can I where is he staying? Like you gotta hook me up.
Him?
You gotta hook me up with this hunk.
So bad.
It's like that moment is the most well, and then later when she's like trying to seduce him is the most I think just
she
like
sneaks into his hotel room and
just ridiculous. Like
it's bizarre.
Yeah, I think it the way it plays across is it just makes her come across as like insane. Like
yes, like yeah, and like and I think we I don't know if we talked about this before, but have we talked about Moore's kissing style?
I'm sure we have. It's not attractive.
Well, it's a lot of smushing. It's like he's sucking the life force out of whoever he's kissing.
Yeah, how do you think he's going to be in three more Bond movies? He needs to suck the life force out of young women.
But she does it to him in this scene. Like, she is, like, sucking his lips off.
I know. He even comments, he's like, you can't ever come up for air. Just like, Jesus.
Yeah, she's like, that's why I'm such a good skater. Breath control.
This next line, like it's goofy, it's funny, but it also is just like it makes Moore look like a grandpa. Yeah. He's just like, I'll buy you an ice cream. Like,
yes, I'll buy you an iced cream.
And it's of like, okay, so you're uncomfortable with this dynamic. How do you think we feel as viewers? Oh, is she too young for you, Bond? Yeah, obviously.
And what's fun about this, like, so. If you think about it, he's basically taking her for just a day out at this scene.
Yeah, it's
he's like,
it is,
I'll go skiing with you.
It is weird that they like they went to hang out afterwards. Like he did buy her an ice cream.
They hang out, and this is when we meet the heavy of the movie, Eric Kriegler. This blonde, another dubbed guy. They're always dubbed.
An East German.
And he's apparently participating in this Olympic decathlon that's going on, shooting things.
We see he's a great shot.
He's a great shot. He's a great skier. And he hates BB.
Oh, yeah. She's like, hi, Eric. Hi. And he just like mean mugs her.
At this point, Bond's just like, I'm done with this shit. He's like, I
gotta go.
I got an appointment.
Yeah, no, I gotta go. Anyway, fuck off. Bye.
He just skis off. He gets chased by Kriegler, and this is when we get like a really fun ski.
Oh wait,
chase
sequence. Real quick. I want to point out. You know, like when they're like going to look at him, like they're going to like, let's check out his.
Come on, let's go watch him shoot.
Yeah, when they go to like watch, it is the most aggressive skiing that they do to just like move. You know, they're not going down like a ramp or anything like that or a run, but they're just like, oh, let's go over there. And I swear, like cut to the film, Bond is like racing or like, okay, let's go over there. It's like, I'll race you. They're just like going through the crowd so aggressively.
I did not notice this.
It stood out to me. It stood out. Play the footage, you know, for this audio medium. You'll see.
He has to show that he's a really good skier so that when we have our chase in a little bit, we the audience buy it.
Well, this culminates in what we mentioned earlier when they end up like skiing down like the bobsled run and stuff. But one thing we didn't mention before that happens, we get a cool stunt. I mean, it's a stunt. It's an Olympic event, but the ski jump. Like, he ends up getting chased to a ski jump thing, and he has to ski down. But there are a series of events that occur before and during the ski jump that we need to talk about. Because I don't understand.
Go ahead.
So the whole setup. So Bond is found out they notice him in the crowd. Because at one point, we didn't mention this, Eric Kriegler shoots one of Bond's ski poles off. So basically, one of his poles just is just like the handle, basically. And they notice this as he's like going through the crowd. They follow him into the ski jump thing. And presumably, they're setting up a plan where it's like, we'll chase him up to the top so he has to do the ski jump. And now, Eric Kriegler, you're a great shot. Shoot him as he flies off. Like, presumably, that's the plan, right?
Sure.
There's a bunch of people who are going to shoot him.
There's the Eric Krieger guy down on the ground. He's going to be in this car. He's going to stick his rifle out and shoot him, presumably when he jumps off. Okay, got it. But here's the problem. Charles Dance, of all people, a very young Charles Dance, who you may know from Game of Thrones.
Wait, what?
This is Charles Dance, like,
this is Tyrion Lannister?
One of the Lannisters.
Tywin Lannister
is here. I think it might be his first movie, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, shit.
But he goes up with the lock guy, the guy with the octagonal glasses and the dove pin, which will come into play later. And basically, like, Locke just sticks his gun out like, hey, if you don't jump, I'll shoot you right here. But here's the problem. Did no one send the memo to Tywin Lannister? Because he takes it upon himself to put on some skis and jump with Bond.
He's like, don't worry, I'll handle it. There's tons of people around. This is like presumably a tourist like event or like Olympic thing.
Yeah, like I got the feeling like press is here.
And yeah, yes. And they're just like, yeah, just ski with him down the fucking slide and try to kill him, I guess. I don't know.
Well, it's like he Leroy Jenkins it. Like, he didn't follow the plan. He's like, I gotta go out. He jumps out and he like punches Bond in the gut. It's so bizarre. Well, here's the thing, because when they both jump, Eric Kriegler on the ground is like, what the hell? There's two of them. This makes no sense.
He's like, I will show them I'm so good at being a heavy, and I'll kill James Bond, but no.
It's like, no, exactly. Was this like Charles Dance, like, hey, you know what? I'm going to move my way up the ladder. It's better to ask for forgiveness than to ask for permission. I'm just going to jump out and do it myself.
This is my moment.
Because that's what it feels like. Because Eric Kriegler, his reaction says it all. Like, what? Like, he's got his gun out. He's ready to shoot. And then there's two guys. And he's like, what the fuck? And this is what allows Bond to escape. Because Kriegler doesn't shoot. Bond ends up doing like this jump ramp. And he, you know, proceeds with the ski chase sequence, which is a lot of fun. But I just never understand the setup for this. Was Charles Dance just like, you know, going rogue here for a second?
You gotta shoot big, you know, but then sometimes James Bond kills you, so.
I think this was just Charles Dance taking his shot, you know?
It's like, it's like when an extra tries to get some words in so they can get a higher billing. It's, you know. And he tried.
But Bond does manage to escape. And we get a funny thing here. Eric Kriegler, he's almost bringing some Jaws energy to this. Because
yeah.
They end up both flying out of the bobsled run. They both crash. Bond crashes first. He's getting back on his skis. Eric Kriegler, like, flies into a barn and explodes out the door. And he's going to shoot Bond, but his rifle's all, the barrel's all bent up. So he takes it upon himself, like Jaws, to just pick up the entire motorcycle.
He just throws it at Bond.
That's pretty cool.
He starts chucking shit at Bond, but like not trying to run after him at that point. Just kind of like, ah, fuck you.
Well, that's what's so funny about this Eric Kriegler guy. He almost is like Tim Robinson. He brings a Tim Robinson energy where he's just like, fuck!
Fuck you!
Just throw my bike at you worthlessly.
Yeah. It's pretty good. And it's almost to the point where when he comes back later in the movie, it's just like, oh, hey,
he's
what's up?
He's pissed at Bond.
Hey, you're still here.
He has like this energy towards Bond, like, you son of a bitch. Like I get an
fucking
inferiority
asshole
complex here with this guy. You know what I mean?
He's just pissed.
He's pissed, man. From this point, though, we didn't mention it. Bond has a contact named Luigi.
Oh, yeah.
Poor Luigi. He gets killed in the car.
With the dove pin.
This sort of thing. So this gets back to kind of the plot, the convoluted meter. So we find out that there are two rival smugglers in this movie. Christatos, played by Julian Glover, who ends up being the bad guy. And Topol, who plays...
Columbo!
Yeah, I knew you'd remember that.
Yeah.
The stuff that, like, totally lost me.
Well, it's because Christatos is actually the dove.
Yeah.
He's basically pretending that Columbo is the dove so that he can get Bond off his scent. He'll hopefully kill his rival. Hopefully this British agent will kill my rival smuggler guy.
Mm-hmm.
And the ATAC is all rolled up into this. Christatos is trying to get the ATAC, sell it to the Russians. Meanwhile, he's just also trying to like use this British agent to kill his rival smuggler.
Yeah. And
whatever you say.
Columbo ends up being a fun fellow. He's always eating pistachios.
I only smuggle pistachio nuts and Starbucks coffee beans.
I don't do heroin, okay, man?
I love in the like finale action sequence how he's still going hard on the pistachios in the
middle of this snack.
Like fight sequence.
We also get just the obligatory, like, another Bond girl to have sex with who's then immediately killed. And
do you know who this is?
Who?
So this is the Countess
Liesel von Schlaf. Liesel.
And apparently, at the time, she was married to Pierce Brosnan.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
She was married to Pierce Brosnan, if I'm not mistaken. They had a couple of kids. Unfortunately, I don't think that long after this, she ended up dying. Unfortunately, I don't remember what of. And Brosnan would end up remarrying like years later. But I guess like when he went to the premiere with her.
Wow.
And this is kind of the beginning of like, maybe the producers are like, hey, this Brosnan guy might have the juice.
Wow.
This is kind of what set the idea in their heads. I don't know if this is before Remington Steele or not, but this was kind of the beginning of like, maybe this Brosnan guy's got something.
Wow. Well, I'll be.
But yeah, she is sort of the obligatory, we got to get a girl in there to kill. She ends up getting killed in kind of brutal fashion. They run her over with a dune buggy.
Yeah, and we see like, it happen. Like,
and you see it happen, you're like, Jesus. She is the girlfriend of Columbo, and Bond's trying to cozy up with her to get more information on Columbo because he's getting sent down the wrong trail by Christatos, mm-hmm. who's a double agent. Brushed aside because he meets Columbo, and Columbo immediately is like, hey, but I'm a good guy.
Hey, don't worry about me. We're actually going to have a lot of fun together.
I'm the fiddler on the roof.
Yes.
He takes him on a thing, and they end up killing Locke because I guess they're doing some drug deal Columbo knows about, and they end up storming it and killing Locke. And this is a cool sequence, not something that Roger Moore did not want to do because he felt it was, while it may have been Bond-like, it wasn't Roger Moore Bond-like. Mm. And it's specifically the scene when Locke is like teetering on the edge of a cliff in his car, he's about to fall over, and Bond ends up just bam. Kicking it off the cliff.
Well, no, he throws the dove pin in with Locke, and I'm like, you dropped this, bitch.
You left this with Ferrara, I believe.
Which, if this had been maybe a previous Moore movie, that would have been enough to tip the scale and probably like the car falls over in Looney Tunes fashion. But this is gritty Bond, so he's got to like bash it off. He kicks it off, and it is particularly brutal. Like, it's well done the way this is framed.
But then he has to get his little quip in at the end.
Have no head for heights.
He's got to get his quip in. Moore didn't like to do it, but it was good for the movie. And I don't know if you guys noticed it, but like as the car is tipping over, it's making its final loop or roll over. You see the guy's like the dead body like fall out of the window.
Oh, God.
Nasty.
Like, I mean, it's like a dummy, but still, you see it just like floop, fall out of the car. It's
pretty
wild. Damn,
we're not fucking around.
They're not fucking, like, what? I'll have to send you guys a clip of it, because it's brutal when you see that dummy just bloop, fall out of the car as it rolls over one last time. But anyway, so at this point, they figure out eventually where the ship is crashed. They have the underwater sequence where Bond fights, like, the guy in the big, like, underwater robotic suit. And then they fight a guy in, like, a robotic underwater vessel or something. And then we get, and this is evidently from Live and Let Die, the scene when they're tied up to the rope and they're dragged behind it. It's, again, to speak
convoluted,
to your point,
but
they could just shoot him and then throw him overboard.
No, they gotta do, like, the most convoluted way to kill him.
Christatos is like, yeah, do another turn in the boat. One more should do it. Yep.
Well, what's so funny, once they end up, they manage to get loose, at the end, he's just like, eh, just run him over.
Yeah, whatever.
All right.
Okay, just run him over. Let's go. Oh, God. And then, we didn't mention this, Melina's parents have this talking parrot.
Oh, yeah.
It repeats everything. And it's kind of the cinch for the movie, because if not for this parrot, they would have found the ATAC. Presumably, if not for this parrot, the Russians would have gotten the ATAC, they would have bombed a bunch of cities, and then the world landscape would have changed.
So that's why you got to keep a parrot around.
Someone award the, parrot they should have around. Awarded the like some medal to this parrot.
Yeah. Yeah. Although, as we learned in this movie, British medals of freedom are pretty fucking cheap.
Yeah, they gave them the Queen's Medal or King's Medal, whatever, to Christatos, but he was a double agent the whole time.
Double
agent. They
should
have given it to Columbo for smuggling pistachio nuts.
Mm-hmm.
So because of the parrot, because the parrot was around when the bad guys were talking about their plans on where to go, he tells them to go to St. Cyril's, which is this really cool abandoned, well, it's not abandoned in real life, but in the movie, it's an abandoned monastery on top of this mountain. And we get a really cool mountain climbing sequence here, which is, like, pretty harrowing. Like, when Bond, like, gets kicked off the side and you see this shot of this guy just falling, just free falling. And it's amazing when you're watching this, because it's just like, you can't fake that rope suddenly becoming tight and, like, you know what I mean? It makes you wonder, like, how the guy...
It's a really cool location. Like, it is, like, it's really striking.
Well, I guess they made a conscious decision in this movie in an effort to get the budget down. Like, they weren't going to have, like, elaborate, you know, set pieces, elaborate, like, Moonraker-style sets. Like, they opted to go for more realistic kind of locations.
The idea is, like, let's not build something. Let's, like, go somewhere where there's already something cool.
And which is cool, because this is a really cool set. You get a lot of cool side shots of, like, this. And also, it's just really cool to see Bond just, like, you know, you get kicked off the side of the mountain, you're dead.
Yeah.
And we do see a dummy. We get a dummy fall off the mountain.
That was pretty good.
Oh, we do.
Yeah,
there's, it's kind of odd. There's no, like, you're talking about Eric, right? When Eric is thrown off.
Is it Eric?
Well,
or
two
is
of them. One of the guys before the guy, not Eric, that's second. The first guy is the guy that's constantly, like, bashing, like, the pitons with his gun.
Oh, right.
He falls off, and then Eric Kriegler falls later, and this is his own fault, because he pulls another Jaws when he's fighting Bond, and he lifts up, like, this big old, like, piece of concrete or something.
Like, I have to crush him like a fucking bug!
Yeah, he gets distracted, and Bond just kind of pushes him out a window, and then he turns into a dummy, and he falls off.
Yeah, it's kind of awkward. Like, there's not even, like, a scream. You just, like, see the dummy, like, silently fall.
And BB gives this, like, oh, like, she puts her hand over
it's kind of,
like,
it's a little awkward. I would have liked a, like, ah!
You mean one of these?
Although I kind of buy it as a character choice that guy would be like, I will not scream while I'm falling off a mountain.
I will give you the satisfaction.
Fuck you, James Bond.
I will accept my death.
But again, we kind of get kind of a down to earth kind of fight. They beat up some guards. The Russian general who we've seen in the last few movies, Gogol, comes to collect the ATAC. But wouldn't you know it, Bond manages to get the ATAC, and as he's about to hand it to the Russian general, he does a little spin move and throws it off the mountain.
He does
like,
hey, that's Luke Skywalker from the end of Force Awakens.
Just tosses it. It is a funny ending, though, of just like, oh, well, you're not happy, I'm not happy. And the Russian guy's like, yeah, you got me. All right, I'm out of here. I'm going to go back in my helicopter. Bye.
I was going to nuke your whole city with that
thing. Okay, but you got me. You really did.
It's so weird. He's like specifically tells the guy, like, don't shoot him. Like,
yeah, don't worry about it.
We're good here.
Have a nice day, guys.
Well, I think it's kind of a thing, because in the beginning of the movie, when the Gogol guy is talking, like presumably to Christados or something, he's saying like, oh no, he's talking to a higher rusher up. He's like, there won't be any direct involvement from
us. Right, right. They're like, so, yeah, but like if it's on the market, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we'll buy it. Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I can only assume he's like, well, we can't, we didn't sanction like the termination of a British agent.
Yeah, it doesn't want to cause an international incident.
It's like, well, yeah, exactly. No skin off my nose, you know, bye.
I love the flight up here. It's a great flight anyway.
It was gorgeous. Yeah, no, and I just love coming to Greece. So, yeah, anyway, no harm, no foul. Bye, guys.
Like, I gotta imagine, it could have been a thing, like, if he did get back in the helicopter, he's like, hey, do you want to catch up? Like, there's a cafe down the mountain.
Yeah, you want to meet up at the bar?
Coffee? Yeah, maybe a pastry. That sounds great.
We'll take the basket down, you know?
Yeah, that would be so fun.
Have you read the basket yet?
You simply must. The view is gorgeous.
And we get another creepy moment here. We're not done with BB yet.
No,
because Christados is killed. He gets a knife to the back. Oh, the ATAC is destroyed. That's detente. Nothing for you, nothing for me. Okay, bye. I'll see you at the cafe later tonight. This is when Beep, it's so strange. They walk back to where BB is, and like Columbo, like, put some pistachio nuts in her hand, and essentially the suggestion is, like, you're going to be my mistress?
Well, seems that BB has a new sponsor.
But,
is she just into old men?
She says no to Christados, but maybe Columbo is just her speed.
Well, I guess to be fair, like her instructor is like, we need a sponsor.
Yeah.
So maybe her end game is like, I gotta get to the Olympics, and in order to do that, I need an old man sponsor.
You're gonna need an old man, okay? Yeah, they were like preparing to flee from Christados, because he was an old creep, when Bond showed up at the monastery. So I don't, you know. Maybe she will get to the Olympics.
I would like to see an epilogue of the Olympics where, like, oh, BB went to the Olympics after all. Let me go cheer her
up. She won gold. That's great. Good for her. I'll buy you an ice cream, girly. How about that?
I imagine it's like a Tanya Harding situation where she didn't win and, like, she ended up paying Columbo to, like, break the leg.
Yeah. Yeah. That did actually happen. So.
But that's For Your Eyes Only. Any closing thoughts?
There was this really stupid end with like the Margaret Thatcher Prime Minister talking to the parrot, which it was very stupid. It was really dumb.
I was thinking like,
give us a kiss.
They're making fun of her, right?
Give us a kiss.
I mean, yes, but also like,
and Margaret
because
Thatcher?
No one liked her at this time, right?
I don't know. She was
very unpopular.
Was she?
Most of everyone hated her from the history.
But also, the Bond series has always been.
I didn't get the feeling they were making fun of her. I thought she was just like, it was just, you know, I thought the joke there was that like, oh, Bond is like, you know, it's on with the Prime Minister and Bond is busy, you know, carousing.
I don't know.
That, sure.
I think regardless, it was dumb. It was...
Yeah, oh, yeah, however you spin it, it's dumb.
Well, really, Mr. Bond.
I think we're having a little trouble with the line, madam.
And yeah, I guess my main closing thought is I really liked Melina. She didn't have a ton to do, but she was very, very pretty. Shiny hair.
We didn't really talk about her too much. I think she's good in the movie.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, unfortunate, as with most Bond women, she's dubbed over with a nothing accent.
Oh, was she dubbed?
Was she?
It seemed like it.
It seemed pretty dubbed. Maybe she wasn't, but in which case, my bad. But yeah, very pretty lady with a crossbow. I'm not mad at that.
With super long hair.
Very long hair. But it, like, in that... Yeah, chic, like, you know, 70s way instead of like, you know, Pentecostal looking long hair. So very nice. Good job on the hair, lady.
You know, she actually auditioned for the role of Holly Goodnight in, or no, not Holly Goodnight, Dr. Goodhead.
God, Goodhead, yes.
And honestly, I'm glad she got this role instead. I think, like, there's that shot when after her parents get killed and she sort of just looks at the camera and she's got, like, those piercing eyes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like, no, she's
much better for this movie.
She's gorgeous. You know?
And she knows how to use a crossbow.
She knows how to use a crossbow. There's worse things.
But it would have been, yeah, she. There are times when I really think she gets relegated to the damsel role, especially when they go underwater to find the ATAC.
And
she,
yeah.
So her only service there, her only role there is to basically be like,
Bond!
You'd better go back to the sub and wait.
Oh, I mean, one thing we didn't mention, you mentioned the underwater scenes. Anytime you see her face underwater, she was not underwater.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
She apparently had some sort of condition where she couldn't do underwater scenes like that. So what they did was they used slow motion cameras, wind machines,
and
like,
wow,
they superimposed bubbles in, like, in front of the camera to make it look like they were underwater.
Wow, okay.
But done fairly well. I mean, if you know it's there, you see it. But if not, I think it's fairly convincing.
I thought it looked good.
Yeah. Well, Mike, any closing thoughts?
It was pretty good. I think this is one of, like I said, I feel like this is the Moore movie that clicked into gear the most. I feel like it's working the most. It is, like, I don't think it's as good as Goldfinger or as good as like the Connery ones at their best, but we're getting close to it, I think, in this one. And it was fun. It was breezy. It is, I think, like the minute to minute of it, as I think, convoluted. Like it's one of these movies where I'm like just at any given moment, I'm like, wait, why is this happening? But the overall plot, like the overall, like, oh, we got to get the MacGuffin is fine. Yeah. So yeah, I think it's a breezy one of these. And I think the stunt work, like you were saying, really grounds it all together.
Yeah. Definitely, especially that car chase, which you didn't really get into, is pretty well done. Like you got car, that little tiny yellow car, like,
oh yeah,
off,
that they flip all around.
I honestly think it was fun that they take out the Aston Martin type deal and or the Lotus in this case and swap it out with like this dingy, crappy little yellow car. It raises the stakes, frankly, because he's like at one point you see like the radiator fan spinning, like it's just jacked up this thing and. Just to see this little car like going down these like mountain roads was fun. But what about you, Jackie? Would you recommend For Your Eyes Only?
Yeah, I think so. If only for the lasting cultural impact of the Arrested Development for British Eyes Only joke, which it just makes me laugh every time. I pulled up the clip after we watched the movie for British Eyes Only. And it rules, so.
Well, I would definitely recommend this too. If one, for one reason only, like the stunt work. I mean, the stunt work in this movie is great. I think it's at times on par with like modern day Mission Impossible movies, like with the helicopter and all that stuff, and the ski chase stuff. And some minor convoluted elements aside, like the plot is fairly easy to follow. Like there's a thing that was stolen, and we gotta get it back. Got it.
Sure.
You know, it's always appreciated when the main story beats are easy to follow, but. When we return, when the Bondcast returns, we'll be going to India with 1983's Octopussy.
Oh,
no.
I forgot we have Octopussy.
and when Moore returns, he will be a spry 56. Until then, folks.
Da-da!
Baby, I'm afraid I have to leave you.
No, James, stay with me.
I have an appointment.
Well, will you come and say goodbye to me at the practice rink later? Please, James, we're going back to Greece soon.
All right, but if I can't make it, all I can say is don't grow up anymore.
Huh?
Oh, the opposite sex would never survive it.